Hello and welcome to Super Saturdays, a comic book media podcast where each episode we'll be focusing on your favorite comic books, TV shows, and movies to figure out if these projects will stand the test of time. I'm Damon, and on today's episode, we have a special guest.
Hello, everybody. My name is David, also known as Doe's Comics.
Boom, 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 boom. Air horn, air horn, air horn, air horn, air horn. We got the Omnibus God on this episode. What are we talking about on today's episode, David?
We're talking Spider-Man artist.
All right, without further ado, on with the show. David, great to have you on. Tell the soups about yourself. Tell the soups about what it is that you do on your channel.
Yeah, so like I said, my name is David. I'm on TikTok as Doe's Comics. Also the same for Instagram. Low-key, follow me on Instagram too. Also known as the Omnibus God, as you can see behind me. That is how I prefer to read my comics. But yeah, I've been on TikTok for just a little bit over a year now. I make videos relating to Omnis as well, but my main thing is I really like to make constructed and art analysis on some of my favorite artwork in comic books. But my main series that I do is called Can They, which actually started with Spider-Man, where I talk about comic book artists that don't normally draw our favorite webhead, and I break down the times that they have drawn Spider-Man. And I have other series too, like I have Can They Batman, I've got Can They Daredevil, Can They Superman, Can They X-Men. So I just try to find rare moments where certain artists that don't normally draw these characters are drawing these characters, and I just talk about it, I show it off, I say why it's cool, and yeah, been loving it so far, been having a ton of fun.
What would you say is your favorite artist that you've covered on Can They?
That's a great question that I should have thought about. shoot, man. Honestly, someone that I really enjoyed talking about for Batman was Ryan Ottley. I absolutely adore Ryan Ottley, and I did. He was my first Batman episode, and that video did very well, and that is what made me want to keep going. His Batman, if you haven't seen it, chef's kiss. It's amazing. It's brilliant.
I'm trying to remember, when did he draw Batman?
So he didn't. So kind of with the series as well, most of the time in my series, these artists have never officially drawn these characters. So for example, for Can They, I'll do an artist like the first Can They episode was Jim Lee. I came up with Can They completely on accident because somebody, a fellow mutual on TikTok, Why So Sidious, he commented and said, why can't we get Jim Lee on Spider-Man? And so that made me think about it, and I said, has Jim Lee ever drawn Spider-Man? So I go to the Googles, I did some research, and he's never been on a Spider-Man book. And there's technically only two official covers where Jim Lee pencils the Spider-Man, where Jim Lee pencils Spider-Man. But then there's commissions and there's just drawings that he's done of Spider-Man for fun and he's posted on Twitter and he's posted on Instagram. So I compiled those all together and I said, what would it be like if Jim Lee drew Spider-Man? Would it be good? Would it be interesting? Like, you know, what does it look like? And so, yeah, that's kind of the point where it's like, it's not necessarily an artist that worked on the character, but they've drawn the character either in a one shot or, you know, in a book that included other characters or for fun. You know, like I did Can They, Spider-Man, Dan Mora. Dan Mora has never been on a Spider-Man book.
I love Dan Mora's Spider-Man, though.
Yeah.
Like, in all honesty, a lot of
kind of for fun.
Yeah. A lot of your artists that you covered on there and everything, I always like think about why haven't they done that shit further? Because there's so many artists that I would have thought would have had something to do with Spider-Man. Like, for example, Jim Lee, known for X-Men, known for Batman. But, dude, you did Marvel before. You also worked alongside Todd McFarlane. So, like, there was, like, no possibilities that you did that officially?
No. He, like I said, two covers, Punisher War Journal, and they weren't that good, in my opinion.
Oh!
If you watch that episode, I actually, the video is about me saying, I don't think Jim Lee's Spider-Man is all of that. Yeah, you know, sometimes these artists, either A, they don't get the opportunity, or B, you know, like, for example, Dan Mora, dude, DC's got him locked down. So
he getting that check, that DC check.
Yeah, I don't think homie's going to be drawing anything but DC character probably for a minute, unless it's for fun, right? And thank God that Dan Mora loves to share with the fans so much, because, yeah, we get to see how cool his Spider-Man looks. But I want that in a, like, I want that official, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, just imagine him, like, doing a whole, like, run on Spider-Man. Like, I don't know. Imagine if they just had, like, a little mini-series or either just something, and Dan Morrow was on there with a really cool writer, and you got to see what his, like, rendition of all the villains were, seeing more of his Spider-Man, all that stuff. But like you said, DC got him unlocked, because didn't they just announce another book spinning out of the World's Finest stuff that they were doing with Dan Morrow and Mark Waid?
Well, he's doing Absolute Power right now, which is like their big event. So yeah, he's drawing that, which is like their big event book, and yeah, he's probably gonna do something after. I think officially he was announced to do another run. I can't remember who or for what, but yeah, like he's right. I mean, rightfully so. Dan Mora, how talented he is, he deserves to be on a. I hope at least that he's on a good contract getting paid, because his turnout, his quality, it's outstanding. It's almost outmatched. He is the Jim Lee of our time, where everybody is goo-goo for his artwork. Like, I think Dan Mora is, I'm not even saying he's the best artist right now, but he's probably the most popular. Like, if you don't include, obviously, like, yeah, you're going to say, like, you're going to have names like, you know, who's like technically, like, people like Ed McGuinness, who's been in the game for a minute, is still drawing comics. You've got Ryan Otley, who's still drawing comics, technically. But, like, I'm talking, like, the new wave. Like, Dan Mora's hands down the most popular guy. I promise you, you put Dan Mora on any book, it's selling, like I don't know what a good saying is, but it's
like hotcakes, selling like hotcakes.
Yeah, selling like hotcakes. I wanted to say pancakes first, but
you was close. Yeah. You was close. Yeah. I'll give you that. They sound like pancakes. All right. I think I feel like what really would officially cement Dan Mara is if DC starts licensing his art the same way they licensed Jim Lee's art, because Batman Hush, you don't even have to be a comic book reader to know all of the art in Hush. If they start doing that type of shit, like, I want to say posters, I want to see this, I want to see that. You lucky.
It's all over.
It is all over. I want that. No, but like, if they start doing that, I'd say give it maybe like 5-10 years. We're going to start seeing some stuff like that. But we're getting ahead of ourselves here.
Yeah, sorry.
David, are you ready for some news roundup?
Let's do it.
All right. Okay, so for this news roundup, I personally wanted to do something a little bit different, just to step outside and also kind of like fit in line with our guests and what we're going to be talking about today. Sidebar, I'm going to cut the Creature Commandos trailer discussion because I forgot to watch the trailer prior to this. So we're going to cut that.
I watched it for you.
Damn. I'm so sorry. You know what? Okay, you know what? Fine. It's quick, isn't it?
No. I mean, do whatever you want to do. It's your show.
Okay. I'll watch it real quick. Creature Commandos. Feels weird hearing Viola Davis.
2 minutes later.
Okay. Okay. All right. I like that. We'll get to that. We'll get to that. All right. So there's a couple of different Omnibuy that are coming out. And as the Omnibuy aficionado, what are some that you're excited for?
Yeah, dude. Still a really great tail end for Omni collectors. We're eating right now. So straight up, I think my next big, like, excited Omni is actually coming out next week. We're finally getting Brand New Day for Spider-Man in Omnibus Edition. I watched, shout out to Omar Nearman Condition. I watched his early, I'm a Patreon, so I watched his video showing off the book, and it looks amazing. I can't wait to get my hands on it. I'm hoping I can get it here soon. But yeah, Brand New Day, starting a new era for Spider-Man, continuing that consistency of the Spider-Man reading order. So that's going to be great. Some more Spidey, though. We've got in September the black suit costume omnibus, which collects a lot of the in-between stuff after Roger Stern's omnibus, and I'm excited for that. Also, the black suit is my favorite Spider-Man costume of all time, and that collects a lot of great material. We've got Extinction Agenda omnibus is coming out in September as well, I think. So hyped for that, continuing the X-Men reading order. And again, it's just like filling in gaps. It's persistent. And yeah, I'm really excited. And I can't think of too much more that I'm like, Ghost Rider, Danny Ketch is getting an Omni.
Really?
I'm excited for those. But yeah, dude. Ghost Rider has, I'm reading, well, I'll say that next because I know that's the next part. But Ghost Rider is getting a lot more love in Omni Edition, and it's making it good for me, and it's making me a Ghost Rider fan because I'm finally reading Ghost Rider, and I'm digging it. But yeah, Ghost Rider 29 is coming out. I'm excited for that. Clayton Crane on artwork. So yeah, the year is ending really good for Omni fans. I think DC Omnis right now, for this year, I think they've kind of wrapped up on everything that I'm interested in. DC announced, though, their Omnis, so like a good chunk of Omnis for next year, and it is amazing. DC next year, I'm excited for. I'm almost more excited for DC next year than I am for Marvel and even what's left over for the rest of this year. But yeah, man, Omni fans are eating right now. We're feasting. We're big boys. So
listen, I'm an Omni fan. I love Omnis. I don't have too many because the price point, I'm the one person who has, like, I have part one of this one book, but I don't have part two yet. But, no. Shit, there's actually a couple books downstairs that are like that, actually, now that I think about it. What the fuck? No, but jokes aside, though, the one that really caught my interest was, I was scrolling on Twitter recently, and there's a couple people talking about it, and this has been a book that I've been wanting to get an Omni for a while, primarily because I've been wanting to read it so fucking bad, and it is Peter Parker Spider-Man by, from the 90s/80s.
Oh, Spider-Man by J.M. DeMatteis?
Yes, J.M. DeMatteis, yes. I don't know if they officially announced it. I think it was a leak, but that is supposed to be coming out next year, I think in the summer of next year. And listen, when I found out that there was no other way of getting that book except for the single issues or reading it online, I was mad. Which, you know, I do have the single issues for Child Within. Haven't read it yet, mainly because I'm just like, I need one more issue from that to complete that story. But I'm really excited for that, mainly because I love Sal Buscema's art. And just the story itself, from what I saw, it got me excited. I think one of these days, though, because I just wrapped up reading Roger Stern's run, one of these days I want to just, like, read after Roger Stern's run all the way until JMS's run. I feel like that'd be a fun little, like, stretch. Which, you know what? That gives me to the next question. What else are you reading at the moment?
Yeah, so like I said, I'm getting more into Ghost Rider. Earlier in the year, I read the Ghost Rider by Garth Ennis and Clayton Crane, which led into the Daniel Way run, which is an amazing run. Like that, those 19 issues were perfect in my opinion. And so now I'm reading the Jason Aaron Ghost Rider Omnibus, which is followed by, so after Daniel Way's run is Jason Aaron's Ghost Rider run. And that's what I'm reading right now. I'm almost done. I've got like 6 issues left. It's not that long.
Who's the writer in that run?
So Jason Aaron.
No, Rider.
Oh, Rider. Sorry.
No, you're good. You're good.
No. Right now it's Johnny Blaze, but okay, there's some stuff going on with Denny Ketch, and there's a whole thing. Jason Aaron is doing the whole like, oh, there's multiple writers all around the world. Yeah, so I'm reading that. I'm also reading for the first time Green Lantern, Green Arrow, Hard Traveling Heroes, Neil Adams.
Oh,
yeah, 70s. What took us into the Bronze Age of comics and you know, a little political commentary and comic books. So
the one panel that makes me think of that book all the fucking time is, it's not funny. It is not, but it's when the black dude.
Yep.
Was spitting facts and said, he was spitting facts. He was like, I don't know the last time I seen the Green Lantern save somebody who wasn't like, he said like, it was something about the aliens, but what about the black people on Earth or something like that?
Yeah. He goes, I see you. He's like, let me ask you something, Green Lantern. This isn't a direct quote, but he basically says, let me ask you something. You know, I've seen you save people with green skin and blue skin and purple skin, but what about the people with the black skin? Like, how come you never help us out? And he tells him that, and dude, even in the comic, GL is like, damn, you right, what am I doing? That's kind of the whole point of this run, is
because he's a cop,
yeah,
flat out.
Yeah. So the kind of thing, which is crazy, because then people try to say, oh, comic dark political, they never were political, but they literally were. This run is, okay, here's a conservative superhero, you know, he's like, here's like a right dude, and here's like an extreme leftist, or like, they like, let's have him go travel on America. And it's Green Arrow being like, yo, you need to stop being a cop, basically. He's like, you need to look at things differently. And they're traveling across America with a guardian, because the guardians are also, you know, they're like, oh, Green, like, you have to do this. You have to maintain law and order.
Wait a second. And, not Marvin the Martian voice.
I didn't mean to do that.
You have to maintain order.
You have to maintain order.
Because I'm a Martian.
But, yeah, so I'm reading that right now. I'm halfway through. I'm actually enjoying it. It's a little corny, but it's good corny. And also, Denny O'Neil was snapping, like, with, like, you know, the stuff he was talking about. Like, it's real. It's relevant even to today.
Nice. Nice reads. I have been reading, if I can grab it.
A few moments later.
Going to be reading Ultra Mega. This is an Image comic, indie comic. And it was described to me as, there's kaiju. There's like this disease that causes people to turn into kaiju. However, there's like, it's not like the conventional type of thing. It's like body horror and a lot of other stuff. I'm not explaining it the best. I haven't started reading it yet. But Carlos at Vault of Midnight Comics recommended this to me. Carlos was on the show a while ago. And from the art, it looks pretty good. And it's by Dave Stewart. And I really like the art.
Ooh, I love Dave Stewart.
Yeah, it's very...
He's doing the pencils?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, shit.
Created by James Herron. Yeah, James Herron did the writing. Oh, Dave Stewart is the colorist. Yeah, Dave Stewart is the colorist. James Herron is the creator, artist, and the writer. Art is pretty great. It's kind of manga-esque, but it's also very I don't know how to best describe it. It's very cartoony, but like very graphic, and it's great. It's great.
Yeah.
Finally, on our news roundup, because we've been talking a lot, we are talking about Creature Commandos. So you watched the trailer for Creature Commandos. I watched the trailer for Creature Commandos. Doze, what was your first thoughts?
So if I'm being 100% honest, my first thoughts, I was like, all right, so what? Just another Suicide Squad movie? It's just animated now.
Bye. Bye. You know something, though? Honestly, when I turned that trailer on and I saw Amanda Waller, her design looked almost identical to that Suicide Squad anime that just came out. That's not in continuity, but like the animation looked exactly the same, or like the character design did. It looked very similar. Not watching the anime. I'm curious about it, but not watching it. But not, you know, I don't blame you for thinking about that, because it did feel very Suicide Squad-esque.
Yeah. And I mean, I get it. You, like, it makes sense within the universe. Like, Amanda Waller, of course, why wouldn't she just make another team of criminals, you know, and do something with that when the first team doesn't work? But even with that being said, the trailer was very entertaining. It definitely intrigued me. If I'm being 100% real, I probably won't like seek it right away. I think I'll probably maybe wait to see what people say about it when it is officially out. Or maybe if I want to do like a watchathon of the new DCU. I'm just, right now, if I'm being honest, I'm kind of burnt out with comic book adaptations of things. And I just kind of, I don't know, this sounds like really douchey and almost like, you know, like I'm a comic hipster or whatever. But I almost kind of just want to stay in the comic book lane. Like, I haven't cared about the MCU in a fat minute. And it's not for this, you know, the reason that people rage bait about, like, MCU went woke, Marvel went woke, like, shut the fuck up. But like, genuinely, I just, it's not interesting to me anymore. And in general, like, adaptations, I'm just like, I don't care. I'll read the comics, like, I'll do that. Now I'm not gonna, you know, yuck somebody's yum or whatever the saying is. Like, if you are excited for the DCEU and you're hyped for Superman Legacy and you're hyped for, you know, Robert Downey Jr. as Dr. Doom.
Hell no.
Yeah, that's
hell stupid. To the no. I will yuck that yum. I would.
Like, if that's what you want to be happy about, I love it. You like, that's great. But I don't care about it. I'm tired about hearing about adaptations. Like, who, like, how many times can you, you know, do something and then, you know, people be satisfied with it because it's, you know, different enough, but still close enough to the, you know, to the comics that it's inspired by? Just read the fucking comics. Like, who cares? But again, I'm not judging anybody. And, you know, that's mainly my thing with adaptations all around. So it looks good. Trailer looked fun. I could see myself watching it, but probably won't seek it out, you know?
What do you love about Spider-Man, and what do you think makes a good Spider-Man artist?
What do I love about Spider-Man? Well, I've been a Spider-Man fan since I was a kid. Ooh, surprise. I'm a guy, and when I was a little boy, I liked the dude in red and blue tights. It's just... when you're looking at it as an aesthetic aspect, he's just fucking cool. He's a cool looking superhero. You are always at least somewhat intrigued in what's going on constantly in every Spider-Man run, even when they're not great. You know, there's always something to be thinking about with the character. And then when you think about, like, the actual stories that were told for the character, I think the mission that Lee and Ditko were originally going for of, we want to make a relatable young character was 100% accomplished. And to the people that continued that after them, whether it be, you know, Lee, then with Romita Sr., or then Roger Stern, like JMS, all these people that would then continue to have that relatability of Spider-Man with the common man, like, it's almost perfect to how they've done it. And Spider-Man is, to me, inspiring because he teaches you things about being hopeful, being patient, being 100% supportive of yourself, and always pushing through, right? And again, it's like, yeah, end of the day, dude in tights swinging around looks cool. But those touching moments where Spider-Man is, you know, pushing through to what seems to be almost the impossible odds, while also doing the impossible odds that we as real people have to go through, paying rent, you know, balancing love lives, you know, taking care of family members, like all of these things, it's inspiring. It really is. I've said this before, but like Spider-Man, I think, is one of the most willful comic book characters of all time. Like, I think if he was like in the, I think Spider-Man would make a better Green Lantern than Hal Jordan. You know what I mean? Like, it's really persistence with that character. That's what I love so much about it. And again, he just looks so cool, man. So speaking of looks cool, moving on to the next question, what makes a good Spider-Man artist? So obviously, yeah, you want to capture what makes Spider-Man great, and that's going to be straight up the suit, the look. I like an artist that is able to keep it somewhat traditional while also adding a little bit of their own flair. Obviously, different artists, different cartoonists are going to have their own style. But what can you do to kind of spice Spider-Man up? And for me, a really good Spider-Man artist does that. They add a little bit of seasoning to what is already in the pot of soup. And you've got examples like Todd McFarlane, right? Where the seasoning was heavy, but it was revolutionary. It took us to then, you know, the Mark Bagleys of the world.
And the details as well, too. Yeah. The way that McFarlane, it's so wild to me that, like, his Spider-Man was so groundbreaking and revolutionary, but not just because of how he drew Spider-Man in the weird, awkward poses. And he didn't come up with spaghetti webbing, but he used it.
Yeah.
And then the big eyes, which I feel like the big eyes are kind of a mainstay now. And then on top of that, even down to when I'll never forget when I was a kid, I was the weird kid who would watch the special features in all of my movies. Like, if I got a DVD, I'd watch all of it in special features. I'd like to watch how it was made and all the stuff in the documentary portions. And watching the documentary, then he was talking about his art, and even down to the fact that he mentioned that he paid attention to the style at the time, he brought up how everyone was doing their own version of John Romita Sr.'s art, and he wanted to do something different, which kind of reminded me of when I was reading old Marvel comics, and I was like, you know, Marvel did have like a little house style for like a little bit, yeah, where everybody kind of looked the same. And he was like, no, like, Peter almost had on bell bottoms, and some of the fashion looked like it was from the 70s, even though we're in the middle of the 80s. And then he even mentioned that Mary Jane had bangs and just bone straight hair. Why isn't her hair big? Why isn't she wearing more fashionable clothes if she's a model? Those little details. Now, did he over-sexualize Mary Jane in portions? Yes, he did. He did. But he drew some good clothes, like regular fashion. I agree with every single point that you made. Having an artist that adds seasoning to the character, adds their impact, but not so much where it feels like it's something different, is what really makes a good Spider-Man artist. And I agree with you for all the reasons you love Spidey. He is a character of willpower. And I'd pay good money to see a Green Lantern Spider-Man book.
Yeah, that'd be so cool.
I would. But since you are the guest, Would you like to begin our list? We're going to be doing top three, and then we'll also have some room for stuff that didn't make the list.
Yes, and I got some even I got a little special something. It's not going to take up too much time. Like I can correspond it, but just to flex my knowledge a little bit, I gotta come with it. So all right, so yeah, top three Spider-Man artists, and of course.
What's your number three?
Number three, I'm the Omni God, so I had to bring references. So number three, we were just talking about him. Now my list, I would say, is pretty basic. I think only my number two is a little bit like, oh, what, you know, whatever. But we were just talking about him. Number three, I got Todd McFarlane.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, I know a lot of people probably have him at number one, right? I think he should definitely be at least in your top three. But I've got Todd McFarlane at number three. Again, we talked about that, how he revolutionized the character. He really changed the norm for Spider-Man while still making it feel classic. And, you know, I relate it a lot to, I love how you brought up the points of like the little details that he was noticing where, okay, how Peter's dressing, how Mary Jane's hair looks, the surrounding environments of New York and stuff like that. To me, Todd did the same thing and had a similar follow-up that John Romita Sr. had. When John Romita Sr. took the book over from Ditko,
yeah,
Romita Sr. did his style was perfect because it was a more mature style, and that helped because that's what was happening in the book. Was Peter was maturing. The character of Spider-Man was moving forward. He's not in high school anymore. He's in college now. He's got a girlfriend now. He's got friends. He's got a group of friends that he goes out with. And, you know, you've got the famous, I think it's in Spider-Man issue 50, the famous scribble sweater. Like, with the white sweater with the
frickin'. Yeah.
Like, he's just like, you've got that where Romita was updating the style for Peter and everybody else as well.
Peter had the turtleneck, the yellow turtleneck.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. Oh, man, it was so cool. Like, Ditko was drawing Peter in button-ups and vests. And yeah, that's the 60s. That's cool. But like, we're getting into the late 60s and Romita was doing the same thing. And Todd did that. And then you look at how people were replicating replicating Romita after Romita left, and people wanted that Romita look, like literally that's what they said. People did the same thing with Todd. After Todd left, people wanted an extreme version of Spider-Man. So you got to give it to Todd for that. And also, I've said this before, when you have probably two of the most homaged comic book covers of all time, and they're Spider-Man comic book covers, and it's because of how great you drew them in this one, Spider-Man number 13, but this is him homaging himself from Spider-Man number one, and then from his Spider-Man 300.
That's
flex. Yeah, like, so he's that good. Like, he's that good.
Like, that is for real a flex, being able to reference yourself. But my thing is, though, this dude, Todd McFarlane, not once, not twice, numerous times, references his own shit.
Yeah.
He did it with Spawn. He did it with, the black suit like you just showed. He then did it with, I think he did a G.I. Joe cover. And then he also has a lot of people homaging it. And then I think the biggest flex of all time was McFarlane is doing those Marvel statues. And he did like a statue of his cup. Come on. Like, listen, don't fucking play with me at this point. Because, like, when I tell you, I would be like, if it was me, nobody could tell me shit. No, like, nobody could tell me shit for real. For real. He really referenced himself numerous times. And then finally, full circle. In a statue. Mic drop.
Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, that's my number three.
Okay. That's a good number three. My number three is Sal Buscema.
Oh, I like that pick.
Mainly because like a little kind of what you were saying in regards to the details that were added in there and everything, and even down to when Romita did the maturity, like you saw a little bit of matureness that Romita added into there. Then you saw McFarlane picking up that torch, and you know something, I think Buscema doesn't get talked about enough, actually.
No, definitely.
One more thing before I go further into Buscema. Since you mentioned Romita, I wanted to add this. Romita is the reason why Peter and the rest of the cast, but primarily Peter, stopped looking weird. I love Ditko's art. I do. I do. Don't get it twisted. Yeah. I do.
No, for sure.
But Peter became perceived as hot after Romita came on there.
I mean, let's just keep it a buck. That's what it is. Romita made good-looking people. That's what
he did.
Like, yeah, he made Peter good looking because, I mean, at the end of the day, like I said, that's the thing about Romita is he matured Peter. Like, he's not it's what's so beautiful about Spider-Man again is Spider-Man can be relatable in so many different aspects of his life. He's a teenager. He's a nerdy kid at school. But, of course, he gets the powers. He starts bulking up a little bit. The girls start noticing him a little bit. He's gonna act. Yeah, he's gonna act a little different. So he can't be a nerd forever. So in college, he gets a group of friends now, and he looks good. He's got two ladies hollering at him. He's got Mary Jane and Gwen Stacy, and so yeah, like it makes sense. Yeah, Romita definitely made. Yo, I love Ditko's. I've made a whole video talking about Ditko's 38 issues, and yeah, you don't have Spider-Man without Ditko. So you know, shouts out to him. But Romita, come on, like. He made literally. Chef's kiss.
But with that being said, Sal Buscema, I'd say he kind of did something similar. He kind of gave us adult Peter. Like,
yeah.
His art was showing, I don't know how to best describe it. The way that he drew Mary Jane, the way that he drew Peter, the way that he drew Spidey, it just felt very mature, but it also felt very fluid. Like there's a lot of like kinetic energy with the way that he did the action, and then even down to just static images. I love Sal Buscema's artwork, and I think that he doesn't get enough play, and I think that's why I have him at number three.
Yeah.
My number two becomes a little bit more conventional, but yeah. I think Sal Buscema should be up there and talked about more.
No, I like that pick. I think for in general, Sal does a wonderful job of drawing heroic characters like that. True. That's another thing. Like, he makes Spider-Man look heroic. He makes Spider-Man almost like someone would Superman. Like, you know, it's like it's that feeling you get with Sal's work, and that's just because he was just that damn good. But I like that pick. That's a good pick.
I think he also, his Peter and his Spider-Man, it just feels like a more confident Peter, a more confident yeah. Spider-Man. This is like a man. This is a grown ass man now. Like, this is who we think of nowadays when we think Spider-Man. And I love it for that. So what is your number two?
So number two, this is the one where I said, this is probably the only one where sometimes people are like, interesting. I've never had anyone get mad at me. But at number two, I've got Ryan Otley. Ryan Otley Spider-Man is top.
You know what? I'll allow it. I'll allow that. I get that.
You can fight me. You can, like I said, no one's been mean to me about it yet. And low key, it's because it's true. Because Ryan Otley on Spider-Man was almost like a dream. It was like a really good dream. It was almost like a type of dream that I don't want to say, but like it was so.
It's an explicit show. You can say it.
I'm going to say it then. Ryan Otley's Spider-Man is a wet dream, man. It is so good. It is, I think, everything that you would want in Spider-Man. The action, the pacing, and the storytelling in the art alone. The way that he's able to, again, add a little bit of mix up with what is already the traditional look for Spider-Man. And the traditional look up to that point, right? Because again, you had originally after Ditko, you had, you know, they even made Romita try to do the Ditko style for a little bit, right? But then it easily turned into Romita style. Then you had Todd take the torch, and you had a couple people in between. To me, Ryan Ottley took all that and said, "I'm gonna keep it classic, but I'm gonna shake shit up." And I love how he draws all of Spidey's rogues. I love the build he has for Spider-Man. I think Ottley does a good job of giving us like young adult Peter. You know, you were talking about how Sal draws like a grown man Peter Parker, and that's great because that worked when it was happening. But you know, obviously after Brand New Day, they tried to make Peter a little bit younger, and then you just have a bunch of other stuff happen up until the Nick Spencer run where Ottley was the artist, and Ottley just draws, you know, a young adult Peter Parker that gives off like just everything you want in Spider-Man, like energy. It's magnetic to the page, and it looks great. And there's not a single moment that is boring. It's comedic. It's the perfect blend of, okay, that's funny. And then at the same time, because of course we know Ryan Ottley, you've got that action that is straight up like brutal. You know, you've got the absolute carnage stuff that happened, and like that was crazy. Like, you know,
I saw some artwork from that. That looked fucking amazing.
Yeah, dude. It's like Peter, you know, I can't remember if I've said this, but like Spider-Man is definitely the coolest looking comic book character battle damaged. I don't think there's any other character that looks cooler battle damaged than Spider-Man Peter Parker. Having the suit ripped up. And part of it, I'm not going to lie, part of it is probably thanks to Tobey Maguire in that Spider-Man 1 movie. But Spider-Man with the ripped up suit and like blood and like gashes and bruises is some of the coolest stuff you'll ever see. And Ryan Ottley took that and did something with it. I got him at number two, and I think it's an easy, like it's a no-brainer number two for me.
I think that's a fair one. I would say that was one that didn't even cross my mind, but it's fitting. You know, Ryan Ottley's work on Spider-Man, and honestly, Nick Spencer's run was the run that got me. I didn't stick with it. I only read maybe the first two storylines ongoing, and then I kind of fell off. Not because I didn't like it, but it was just because, you know, life. But that run held just like the early part of the run holds a special place in my heart because it was the one that got me to want to get into modern Spider-Man again. Because I primarily was just reading old shit. Still do, but the art itself that Ryan Ottley does in that book, it felt like a warm hug. I don't know how to best describe it. Because like grew up in the early 2000s, so I'm used to seeing comics looking a certain type of way. And Ryan Ottley's work looks modern, but it also feels like 90s, early 2000s. Like when I see his artwork, I think about the PS1 Spider-Man game in the best way possible. Like it just reminds me of that. And even seeing the different bits of his art as the run progressed, you could tell that he tweaked it as he was going. I'm even thinking about how early on people were talking about how he drew Mary Jane very similar to Alice Eve. And then he kind of slightly tweaked it as it went on. I'm like, you know what? I like that. I like you course corrected.
Yeah,
his artwork is great, and then even down to like you're saying the battle damage, the stuff that I seen with the blood and all the other type of shit, it was really reminded me of the battle damage stuff he would do in Invincible.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm talking about. Where he's able to, what he did on Invincible. Granted, I haven't read all of Invincible, but it's kind of hard to not, you know the Ryan Ottley art style in Invincible, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, like all those original concept designs that he came up with, and you know, in that universe with Robert, it was really great. It was great stuff. And then for him to take that talent of, you know, messing around with concepts and putting it in a, you know, in an existing property, and in this case Spider-Man, I mean, that's just so badass. Like to see how he draws his scorpion, how he draws his venom. One of my favorites that I just adore so much, like I wish I could get more of it, is it's the issues with Kraven, where Kraven is hunting everybody in Central Park or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He's hunting like all the animal-centric characters. So basically all of Spidey's programming. And Spider-Man is wearing the black suit. So it's Ryan Ottley drawing Spider-Man in the black suit. And it is so clean. It's like savory almost. I look at the few panels that, you know, give us a good look of it. And it's just everything that I love in Spider-Man, in Ryan Ottley, and in the black suit. And again, I really love how he draws Spider-Man's build. I think he keeps it on the line of, like, you know, he's lean, he's not too buff, but like he gives Spider-Man like a nice, like, this is gonna sound crazy, he gives Spider-Man a nice body. Like, it's just,
he does.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, it looks good. It just looks badass. It looks fun. There's energy to it. Of course, shout out to all the colorists that worked with him, because they made that book pop. And Ottley knew what he was doing, the way he's able to like set up, again, that storytelling with his artwork. It's brilliant with his Spider-Man. And I think, you know, a few years down the line, especially if Ottley comes back and works a little bit more on Spider-Man, because, you know, he's only, when you look at the grand scheme of things, you know, he's only got a couple of, he's got like 40 issues or whatever, right? Which you compare that to like John Romita, who's got like almost 100 and stuff like that. Like, I think down the line, we will look at Ottley as a Spider-Man artist and just say, wow. You know, the same way we say wow about McFarlane. I'm just saying it now. I'm calling it now. So
I think you're right, though, because I've seen a lot more people talk about Ottley's work. And then even down to the fact that I see all of it, like a lot of his artwork for Spider-Man being reposted. And then he gets a lot of commissions to draw Spider-Man as like mm-hmm. Since he worked on the book and everything. I really do think that he's going to go down in history as a really good Spider-Man artist, because I do agree that, yeah, he's deserving of that number two spot. I'll give you that. Now, my number two. And you know something, Soups, I wrote this down, but I don't feel like going and getting the book because it's downstairs. So we're going off of memory. My number two is John Romita Sr. and Jr.
Oh!
I think they're deserving of number two spot, both of them. Mainly because, and not to say that they're interchangeable, because they're not. They're both very unique. But the thing that I love so much is that both of their art complements each other in the best ways possible. And John Romita Jr., seeing his art progress all the way back from Daredevil, Man Without Fear, and then seeing all of his early stuff in the 80s when I was reading the Roger Stern run. I love his 80s art, John Romita Jr.'s art. Especially in the, and for those who haven't watched it, check out the Who Is It episode where we talk about Mary Jane. The episode, not the episode, the issue for Options in the Roger Stern era, where Peter decides to drop out and also Mary Jane pops up after being gone for like a year or two. Just the art right there. Listen. John Romita Jr. And then even in the JMS run, love his artwork. And then John Romita Sr., I still think to this day, when you think Spider-Man, you usually think of John Romita Sr. Or if it's not John Romita Sr., it's maybe Bagley. Or maybe it's like, you know, somebody else. But John Romita Sr.'s artwork, like you said, you kind of nailed everything on the head when we were talking about Sr. His Spider-Man is the most, like, this is who Spider-Man is. This is the foundation.
It's the definitive Spider-Man. It's the definitive look for Spider-Man. And even though he's not, even if you don't think he's the best Spider-Man artist, he is the definitive Spider-Man artist. Like, you almost, like, it's impossible to argue that. So, yeah.
Exactly. Even down to like the fact that I'd even argue that JMS laid the groundworks of how all these characters look. Peter has his signature hairstyle because of Romita Sr. with a little like two fringe bangs, not the ultimate one, but the, you know, the 60s two fringe bang. And then Mary Jane has dimples because of him, and every single artist ever since she's been introduced still draws her with dimples to this day. And just the little details that he put in all of these different characters. Love it. I would say that Ditko did do some of the groundwork for it, but there's certain things that Ditko did leave for these characters that I don't really think was carried over when Romita came along. Even down to Gwen Stacy's original look, Romita tried keeping that look, but then he slowly changed it to the one that we know nowadays, and that's been carrying on since. Mm-hmm. I think the both of them are in the Hall of Fame for like some of the greatest Spider-Man artists ever. And like you said, like, you know, Senior is the quintessential Spider-Man. And I think John Romita Jr., how I will say, I'm not really the biggest fan of his like present day work.
Right. Well, I was just going to say, it's already cut you off, but
no, you're good.
I'm big kudos because John, people are so stuck on how JRJR is doing his work right now. And look, man, I'm sorry the dude is old. But yeah, his hands aren't what they used to be. It's like watching Michael Jordan on the Wizards, right? Like, you get the occasional 25-point game. You get the Kobe Bryant game where he dropped 55 and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's not perfect. But to say that Romita Jr. was never good, art is subjective. I have been told by many people that I need to let people have their opinions. My fiance tells me that all the time. Let people feel how they feel about things. But at the end of the fucking day, no. Because John Romita Jr. wouldn't have been on Spider-Man so long if he wasn't good. He wouldn't have influenced other artists. I don't give a damn what you say, because a lot of people, and this is another person who in the beginning a lot of people didn't like, but now, thankfully, he gets a lot of respect. Humberto Ramos, definitely you get a lot of Romita Jr. in Ramos.
You're right about that, though. Yeah.
Dude, because it's all, again, like, it's people taking their influences. Romita Jr. took a lot from his father, right? Because why wouldn't you? You have one of the greatest artists of all time as your father. Why wouldn't you draw like him? You look at early Romita stuff, it's very similar to his dad. But then he starts changing it up, right? He throws in a little bit of experimental stuff, like, you know, with how he makes people's builds. It kind of, at times, it feels like it's a little bit inspired by Kirby, as every freaking artist in the world is, right? Rightfully so. But you know, you get that sketched styled look from Romita that would become his look. And then, yeah, he changes it up throughout the years. His X-Men run, the Daredevil stuff is brilliant. Yeah. And then
even when he did Eternals too.
Yeah, Eternals, like the 2000s was another kind of era for him. Romita Jr. gets too much shit, and it's because people don't look back. They just want to look at the present and they want to say, oh, his art sucks now, so that means this. And it's like, his art isn't good. Yeah, you're right. Right now, it's not good. It's not his fault. He's old.
Yep.
But that doesn't mean you can erase what he's done in the past. What he's done in the past is brilliant. It's great for the character, and it is a legacy that is cemented in the character. So you could say you hate Romita Jr. all you want, but guess what? He is very important to Spider-Man. And if you like Spider-Man, you got to at least respect John Romita Jr. So kudos to you for putting him on there. I love Romita Jr. so much. Officially in my full list, I've got Romita Sr. at 5. I've got Romita Jr. at 4.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so like, I mean, I respect you having kind of both of them in your two spot. But for me, Romita Jr. slightly edges out Romita Sr. Like,
I can see that, though.
Yeah, I love everything about Romita Jr.'s artwork, especially that 2000s JMS run. It makes me feel good. You know, you were talking about how Otley's work makes you feel warm. Like, that's how I feel with Romita Jr.'s Spider-Man. Like, it feels like a nice hug. And again, I just love everything about it. Like, the build, how he makes Peter, the fashion. Yep.
Right here. Got it. Right here. Like, you're absolutely right. And for those who are listening, not actually watching, I just pulled out the volume one of the omnibus for JMS's run, which, okay, I want to laugh a little bit. This is kind of what I was being. I only got part one of this book.
You know what I'm buying too?
No.
Yo, it's getting reprinted. You better get that shit before it comes out of print again.
Listen, it's on my list. You know, there's so many times where, because like my birthday was last month, and I told myself, I was like, I'm going to put myself a little bit of money on the side. And then I found one online used or whatever. I was like, okay. I wait for this month. Da, 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 da. By the time I had it, that shit was fucking sold. I was so mad. I was so fucking mad.
Yeah, you can. It's getting reprinted. Volume 2 is getting reprinted. So you can get it on, you know, one of the discount websites. I won't tell you which one you should go to, but.
Organic Priced Books?
Organic Priced Books?
No, I think it might be.
But don't spend more than like $90 on that book, because it's getting reprinted, so you'll be able to snag it for a good price.
I'm gonna have to wait then. Yeah, I'm gonna wait for it for when it's reprinted. But jokes aside, though, I'm gonna wait for it when it's reprinted. But like, no, what was I saying? Let's say something. But no, like, you're absolutely right with that, with JRJR stuff. That I love the growth of his work and everything. So I'm thinking about how you mentioned the changing between his styles and everything. Even when I was looking at his work in during the Stern era, it was interesting because like his work initially, it was very similar to his dad's, but it was almost like a modern version of his dad's. Like, yeah. It was still semi-realistic. It was like less stylized, but then his more modern stuff, not today modern, but like early 2000s modern stuff.
Yeah.
It was more sketchy, more angular. And like you said, Kirby-esque. And I always looked at his stuff as like, his stuff looks like it would be an animated series. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, you know what? Imagine a Spider-Man animated series in JRJR's artwork, or a video game. That would have been dope.
Yeah, it would have been sick. I love it. I'd love it.
But my bad for cutting you off on that.
No, you're good.
Okay.
Are we number one now?
Yep. Before you do number one, though, what were some honorable mentions?
So some honorable mentions, and real quick too, I'm going to throw this out there. So some honorable mentions, I think obviously a Spider-Man artist that gets lost in translation. We were talking about Sal Buscema, which great pick again. And yeah, a person that gets lost in translation, Ross Andrew, who you could argue had a lot of similarities to Romita Sr., but I think Ross was one of the few artists that would still have, I can tell you who Romita Sr. is, and I can tell you who Ross Andrew is. And that's not just because I'm a Spider-Man aficionado or whatever the word is, but like, it's because Ross's artwork is that good. Like, he does a good job of making Spider-Man his own while still making it feel classic. I think he's another artist that you probably have definitely seen his artwork, but you just don't know his name because he didn't get a lot of shine. But Ross, for sure, you got to have him on there. Alex Ross, another Ross. But Alex Ross, that painted style, it's classic in almost everything. But specifically the way that he draws his Spider-Man is just so good. It's bringing Spider-Man to life besides, you know, casting a person to play him in a movie, right? You get the feeling of comics while also real life with how Alex Ross draws characters and paints characters. The way he drew Spider-Man, and just in general, the story of Spider-Man in Marvels by Kirk Busiek and Alex Ross was amazing. I love how he draws Spider-Man's costume. I love the Spider-Man Raimi film. I love the promotional art that Alex Ross did for that. Alex Ross definitely, like, the cover issues, the cover run that he had with Dan Slott in 2015, all those covers he was doing for Spider-Man, immaculate, really great work. But you know the meme where it's those two guys with the podcast where he goes, "What's your favorite Pop-Tart flavor?" And he's like, "Oh, strawberry." He's like, "Oh, that's such a basic bitch answer." And the dude gets mad and he goes, "All right, you want my real answer? My favorite Pop-Tart is the 2002 Spider-Man promotional Pop-Tarts from, like, you know," and he does, I don't know if you've seen that, but, like, you can look it up.
I did.
Yeah. So I made a quick top three of my Pop-Tarts, my Pop-Tarts, in case people think that my official list is too basic. So real quick, I've got Bernie Wrightson Spider-Man, which is amazing. You haven't checked out Spider-Man Hookie. Wait a minute. You need to. Yeah, Wrightson?
Why does that sound familiar?
Bernie Wrightson is the creator of Swamp Thing. He's done a lot of DC horror stuff. What else did he did Batman the Cult, which is my favorite Batman comic of all time.
Oh, yes. I've seen this art. I've even heard about the story Hookie before.
Yeah. Spider-Man Hookie is such a beautiful book because of Bernie Wrightson. It's high fan. It's like the Dungeons and Dragons meet Spider-Man, and it's beautiful. I made a video about that. But Bernie Wrightson, Spider-Man, boom.
I love this.
Another one, Scott Johnson, the promotional artist in marketing for Spider-Man during the
2000s. Oh, you my know God. Him. Yes.
Even if you don't know him, you know him. Scott Johnson is a man that, like, gave that's our childhoods, right? Us 20 sums who grew up loving Spider-Man, we'd go to Walmart, we'd go to the toy section, Scott Johnson art on there. You would get
back
a color
to school on a folder, on a t-shirt, on everything,
backpacks, everything. Scott Johnson, boom, he's on the list. And then lastly, real quick, Frank Miller Spider-Man is brilliant. Now, again,
I was going to mention Frank earlier, so glad you did.
Similar to JRJR, yes, I know Frank Miller is cooked now. I know he's although I do like some of the Miller pieces, we don't have to get into that though. But Frank Miller in the late 80s drawing Spider-Man, he hasn't done it a lot, but he's drawn Spider-Man. He's drawn, I think, like 5 issues of Spider-Man, and 2 of them were annuals. That is some of the best looking Spider-Man panels I've ever seen. What Frank Miller is able to do with Spider-Man is so ahead of its time, where he was putting Spider-Man in, like, fluid motion and poses that, again, you wouldn't see until Todd McFarlane, Mark Bagley. Now, I'm not saying that he's all credit to that, because you've definitely got some good, cool, kind of ahead of its time shots with, like, Ditko and Romita, but there's so many examples that I think is perfect with Miller drawing Spider-Man, and he has, like, the choreography with Miller. Miller knows how to do storytelling panel to panel. His Daredevil is a perfect example of that, where the choreography is just there. It's motion. It's like dancing for Miller and drawing characters. And his Spider-Man is, it's a chef's kiss. It looks good. It looks classic. It looks Miller. You can identify that it is Frank Miller from the 80s. And it's fluid. It feels good. Him drawing Spider-Man swinging through New York, it looks amazing. Looks ahead of its time, even. That's my top three, like, niche Spider-Man artists, in case people are like, "Oh, those comics, you have the most basic Spider-Man artist top three. That's my 2002 promotional Sam Raimi Spider-Man Pop-Tarts for Spider-Man artists.
You know what? I can dig that. Because I'm glad you mentioned Frank, because when we were talking about JRJR, I was thinking about how, like, people try to, like, you know, talk that shit about Frank, which I will give that. I can understand it. Frank's work now is questionable. Not only just his art, but it's also his writing. His writing is not as good as it used to be. Yeah, and personally, right. I have this theory that when it comes down to creative works, I feel like artists have a shelf life. I feel like everyone has a shelf life. Mm. There's a point where artists, depending on what's going on within their life and whatnot, they may expire, and you know what, it's okay, it happens. Which I think that's kind of shitty to put it like that, but no harm at all. Yeah, but like, yeah, but with Frank, people don't try not to remember that, like, this is the same man who revitalized Daredevil. Like, mm-hmm. Like, whenever people think Daredevil, they think about Frank's Daredevil, and also Elektra. And just glad you mentioned Frank. And I've seen a couple of his Spider-Man, and his Spider-Man looks fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And then Scott Johnson. Doze, I want to apologize. I did not recognize your game.
Come on, man.
Come on.
I don't play when it comes to the webhead, man. That's my dude.
I get you. And you know something? When it came down to Scott Johnson, I follow him on Twitter, and I love the fact that when he first started posting his work on Twitter, he started getting a lot of, like, Gen Z people talking about how this is childhood and, like, they love his art. And he was kind of touched by that. He was like, you know, it's kind of wild realizing that apparently my art kind of defined X, Y, and Z. So thank you all. And I was just like, you did, though. It really did. Because, like, think about it. Like, I'm even remembering the whole, whenever they'd market Marvel Heroes, it would be Wolverine, Hulk, Spider-Man. Because all three of them had movies, successful movies. Well, not Hulk, but, like, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But, okay, those are some good picks. I would say for my honorable mentions, I would say, oh gosh, who would I say is my honorable mentions? Todd McFarlane is an honorable mention. I would also have to give it to, I'm blanking on spot. Oh, David Michelinie. I would also have to give it to, oh my God, I'm really just blanking on Spider-Man artists. Y'all, I really should have grabbed that damn book because I wrote it all down. You know what? I'll leave it right there. That's my two for honorable mentions at the moment. If I forgot somebody, well, I'll add a blurb at the bottom. But let's go on to the number one. My number one on my list is kind of basic, so I want to see who your number one is.
So, all right. So my number one, I feel like we might have the same number one, and I think most people should have this guy as your number one. My number one is Mark Bagley.
Hey! Yep.
Mark Bagley Spider-Man. Now, to those who aren't watching, I'm holding up the recently released Spider-Man by David Michelinie and Mark Bagley omnibus, and this was my most anticipated omni, a, because it's more Spider-Man material, it adds to the reading order of Spider-Man, but b, because it's the era of Mark Bagley, and Mark Bagley to me is the perfect Spider-Man artist. Now, this omnibus collects his 90s stuff, so like the actual ASM stuff. What is so great about Bagley is his 90s stuff with Michelinie on the, you know, 616 actual ASM run is amazing. It's flawless. It's everything I want in a Spider-Man artist. But then in the 2000s, you get a little something called, And to the new readers, I know you're going to be a little confused, but you get a little something called Ultimate Spider-Man. What I deem as the greatest Spider-Man run of all time, and what Bagley does on that run, you would think he couldn't outdo himself from his 90s work, but he does it. His style changes up a bit. He makes it fit the narrative of Ultimate Spider-Man, where they're like, hey, we're starting Spider-Man over. This is a new universe. We want to make him a teenager again. We want to put him in high school again. Do something with it. Brian Michael Bendis, do something with it. Who's the artist? Oh, let's pick Mark Bagley. He's drawn Spider-Man before. And Bagley pivots in a way that most artists don't. And it's okay that most artists don't pivot and, you know, they keep their traditional styles when they're doing different series. But what Bagley does in the 2000s with Ultimate Spider-Man is amazing. What he does in the 90s with Amazing Spider-Man and others was also amazing. Bagley has, to me, the perfect build for Spider-Man. When I think of Spider-Man and how he's built, how he looks, kind of that lean, almost skinny, muscular body, I think of Mark Bagley. When I think of the big eyes, yes, credit to McFarlane for kind of getting that going first. I think of Bagley, though, because Bagley, to me, makes those eyes pop even more. I love everything about this man's artwork, and the way that he draws Spider-Man's rogue gallery is also very special. I mean, as you can see here, look at all that. That looks fantastic. You've got Rhino, Doc Ock, Venom, Vulture, Mysterio, Shocker. It honestly, this era of Spider-Man felt like the Romita Sr. era of Spider-Man, where, ooh, you know, this is how Romita Sr. draws Green Goblin. That looks really nice. I really like that. Ooh, we're getting introduced to characters like the Shocker and Rhino. That's really cool. He's a cool concept character. Bagley does the same thing. Ooh, Bagley drawing Rhino. He looks badass. Bagley drawing Scorpion, you know, when we get it for the first time with the full mask thing. That's just so cool. And as much as I say, yeah, Romita is the definitive Spider-Man artist, and I stand by that. I think if you want to argue that Bagley's the definitive Spider-Man artist, I won't be mad at you. I won't argue with you. And I think he is the best. What he was able to do for the character, the turnaround he had for the character, the impact he had on the character, and also the influence he had on the character. You could say a lot of artists have influence from Bagley's Spider-Man. Ed McGuinness, I think, takes a lot of elements from Mark Bagley's Spider-Man. I think Ryan Otley's got a little bit of Bagley in him. And it's not to say that these, you know, when I say influence, I'm not saying like straight up copy and paste. But, you know, you see it. You see what Bagley did and how he redefined the look for the character. And just like I mentioned with Otley, as well as how much I love Otley drawing Spider-Man in the black suit, those few moments that we got it. Bagley drew Spider-Man in the black suit so damn good, both in the 90s and the 2000s, that he got to do what Todd McFarlane is doing now. He got to make action figures inspired by that look. He had the video game where the video game was stylized to look like his artwork because he was that damn good. He's still that good. I know people just love to hate on old people low key. I know, you know, I think he had like two covers of Ultimate Spider-Man recently that people were kind of hating on.
Ooh.
And I will admit, they were a little rough. They were a little rough. But at the end of the day, it you can't erase this man's legacy. He is the perfect Spider-Man artist, and he's my number one.
I agree with every single thing that you said. And in all honesty, I kind of don't want to count those recent covers, mainly because didn't he recently work on Amazing, within the last couple of years back for Nick Spencer's, and it looked great. I think he probably was just like, okay, I'm just gonna do this cover real quick here. I want a quick plug.
And he worked on Spider-Man again with Dan Slott, I think 2 years ago. And
yeah,
I'm pretty sure he's the main artist on Superior.
I think he is.
Yeah, or at least he was, like when Superior Spider-Man, the new Superior Spider-Man, when that came out, he did the first couple issues, I'm pretty sure. So, and it looked good. It looked just like, it looked like a nice mixed blend of his 90s and his Ultimate 2000s stuff. So, yeah, dude, Bagley, he still got it.
And he still got it to this day to me. And I think, like you said, I'm glad that you touched on how I don't see many artists being able to, like, and there are, not saying there's not, they're able to bend their, like, style, but then go right on back, but then also do something new and creative, because it's like you were saying, Bagley could have easily just did what he did in the 90s for Ultimate Spider-Man, but it was all of the attention to detail for me. He made a contemporary world that felt modern at the time because it was the early 2000s.
Yeah. Yeah.
He paid attention to what younger people might be wearing. He paid attention to hairstyles. Hell, he gave Peter the iconic weird, I don't even know what type of cut that is, but that shit, that cuts in style again. with the little two pieces or whatever. It's like a bowl cut, but it's not a bowl cut, but it is a bowl cut. I don't know what the hell that is, but like white teens everywhere are getting that shit. But aside from that though, even down to his Spider-Man in the Ultimate Universe, that Spider-Man, if you were to put a picture of that Spider-Man, and yeah, it could also be because I'm a comic book fan, or if I was just a general audience person who's only played Ultimate Spider-Man, you can really differentiate that Spider-Man from main universe Spider-Man. And it's honestly primarily due to the way the spider looks and just the art itself. That art, I think, not only just defined Ultimate Spider-Man, but to me, it kind of defined the entirety of the original Ultimate Universe, almost, even though he didn't do all of the art for that entire universe. I think he did do some of it for a couple other like characters, but he didn't do the entirety of that. And like you said, with the big eyes, I think I always look at it like this. McFarlane's eyes on Spider-Man, yes, he did the big eyes first, but his eyes were a little bit more sinister. They're a little bit more angular. They're a little bit more serious. They're a little bit like, oh, shit, you're striking. Whereas Bagley's is like, it's like bug eyes. It's like, like they're like bug eyes, but they're like nice. And that just always gives me young Spider-Man vibes. And rumor has it, and I think this was confirmed, I'm not entirely sure. This might have been in the Sony leaks, I don't know. Rumor has it that for Amazing Spider-Man 2, Bagley actually gave them the designs for the suit. The suit was primarily based off of Bagley's art. Sony just didn't give him credit for it. Correct me if I'm wrong, Soups. Would love to hear it. I'm pretty sure that did come out, or whatever, back when the Sony shit was happening.
I believe it.
I can believe it, yeah. It looks very heavily Bagley inspired, even down to the way the eyes look. And honestly, I still stand by. I love the Amazing Spider-Man 2 suit. But Bagley's art, I really do think that is some art that'll stand the test of time. And you know something? I think of all of the comic book characters, I think Spider-Man has yet to get like an abysmally terrible comic book artist. I mean, there's some people who haven't drawn him the best, but I think like at least there's some redeeming qualities in the bad art.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking like main Spider-Man, I mean, yeah, you probably have like a couple of fill-in artists where it's just like, who cares? Like it's nothing special. But I don't know if this might be a little controversial, but I do not enjoy. And it's funny because I do enjoy him as an artist, but in this book, in Spider-Man Reign, I do not like Kara Andrews' artwork. And it's just the way, and Kara Andrews is very talented. They're an artist that can do a lot of different styles, but their decision for how they drew Spider-Man, how they drew the book in Spider-Man Reign, the original one, because I know there's a sequel, unfortunately. It just wasn't for me. That definitely was a Spider-Man book where I'm like, nah, I don't need this. Yeah, I don't need this. Don't appreciate it. But I know Kara Andrews is a very talented artist, so I don't want to hate on the name, just that one time.
I can see it. I could see it. Mainly because the line work is like, I'd say the artwork in that book, I can understand why it'd be divisive for some people. I enjoyed it, but there were a couple moments where I was like, okay. But I think we got some solid lists.
Yeah.
think we've got some really solid lists. But you heard it here, folks. These are our lists. So, you know, let us know what your Spider-Man artists are, your top five, top three. Be sure to let us know on Instagram at Super Saturdays Podcast, TikTok at Super Saturdays Pod, and Twitter at Super Saturday PC. Where your messages and reviews can make their way on the show. This was Super Saturdays. I'm Damon.
And I'm Doze Comics, David.
And David, where can the Supes find you?
So like I mentioned, Doze Comics on TikTok as well as Instagram. Please follow me on Instagram. I'm trying to grow a platform in case things go south. But yeah, TikTok is primarily at where I'm at, Doze Comics or the Omnibus God. So yeah, go ahead and check it out.
All right. Well, as always, see you next Saturday, Supes. And get those pictures of Spider-Man.